And our special guest tonight, Christian Von Laer, he's done just a great job giving us his perspective of 2012. And we'll come back and take your phone calls with him on Coast to Coast AM. Christian, right at the top of the hour, we're talking about some of the things you're doing to get ready for 2012. Why don't you go through those again?
I mentioned that multiple locations is a good idea because we don't know when something's going to happen, and changes to the earth or anything that affects it could happen so quickly. So that's an advantage. Being close to the mountains could be an advantage because if there's flooding or water, we want to reach heights, and preferably something around 2 miles high would be great. I'm close to Mount Shasta. Also, it's advisable to be by the water if you're concerned about an earth flip, and it is something I am concerned about, because if the earth flips, the water may rise from the east and move towards the west, so I want to be towards the west coast to get the last remnants of the water should that come. But in addition, I think the number one thing people need to do is to be aware of all the possibilities. So that's deep in their mind. Secondly, I think they need to get involved and understand what the government is doing, what other people in the world are doing, so they can find the best solutions for them. Some people have the option of moving around the world. And of course, places like Tibet or the Andes could have an advantage. But when you think about it, there are plates, tectonic plates moving everywhere. There's volcanoes everywhere. There's water everywhere. So we can't be certain that there's an ultimate place to be. But try and come up with something that works with your senses, because your senses are probably going to direct you to the right place for you to be.
Okay, let's go to some of the calls now. Susan in Greenville, South Carolina, first-time caller. Hello, Susan. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, George. I want to thank you for your show because it is so amazing and so awesome, and I'm fixated on the information you present.
Well, thank you.
So I wanted to ask a three-part question for Christian. I wanted to ask about the crystal skulls, and I wanted to ask, do you think, Christian, the Atlanteans or the ETs created these skulls? And do you think by 2012 we'll find the legendary 13 skulls, excuse me, and activate them? And what will they be able to tell us?
Yes, I believe the crystal skulls exist, first of all, and that I think that they're really an extraterrestrial object that were perhaps in the hands of the Atlanteans, and it's probably those that they were moving around the earth and the world when they're building temples, and we have things like the Hall of Records and other sacred sites. We also talk about relics, and the crystal skulls could be part of that. Now, to me, the crystal skulls have an energy connection, and it may tie to vortices, meridians, things of that nature, and I think they may be employable if anything should happen around 2012 or later as far as controlling what might happen with the movement of tectonic plates, just like sound might have been used to fuse them back in the time of the Atlanteans. So I think there'll be a tool that'll be purposeful. I think we'll find out that information as we discover more information from the Hall of Records and records in other places, such as the labyrinth underneath water in around Egypt, also carrying some of these secrets. But the star people that I mentioned, those people in us that have guides that are extraterrestrial already, they're supposed to have a message for us, and they don't usually know what their path is in life, but they know they have something very important to do, Susan. I think that's going to start coming to the forefront as anything that's earth-changing actually starts occurring. These people will suddenly, innately start remembering this information and start sharing it. So all together, collectively, I think we'll find the skulls, we'll know how to activate them, there'll be a purpose for them, and it'll probably be what it is that causes that statement I said, that the earth may change, but the consciousness of man will not become extinct. We must live through that, and I think they're the process to get there.
Okay,
wow.
Susan, go ahead. You had a few more.
Oh, well, that was all that I had. I just have been fascinated with the skulls and wanted to know more about them, especially I've been reading a lot about the Mitchell Hedges skull and things. And I just wanted to know what all Christian could tell me about finding them and then how to use them.
How do you use them, Christian?
I think it's really the Atlanteans were renowned for using crystals and energy through the process of crystals, as perhaps the Anunnaki. So there's probably something innately in the construction of those skulls and the materials that they're made of, and their action on one another that'll cause the effects to come about. It's something like if you're playing a piano, there's a bunch of notes there, but when you strike certain notes, we get this genius called a chord. So I think when they're in proximity, almost like tuning forks would resonate with one another, I think they will be self-activating, and they'll carry out their purpose.
Okay, great. Thanks, Susan. Next up, we go to Montebello, California. It's Sanchez, west of the Rockies. Hi, Sanchez. Go ahead.
Hey, good evening to you and to all the listeners around the world.
Super.
And I would like to cue in on something that you were just mentioning, Christian, and that is the spraying of metal particles into the atmosphere. The reason why I'm asking this is there's currently a phenomenon occurring mostly right now in Europe. It's called chemtrails or geoengineering. One of the strongest proponents of this particular thing is Bill Gates, along with Richard Branson from Virgin Airlines. The one difference that you were mentioning is in the particular metallic particle that's being sprayed. In chemtrails and geoengineering, the three major elements in the spray is aluminum, barium, and strontium. Now, I know that you were just mentioning the spraying of gold particles. Now, is there any difference or are there any parallels to this phenomenon of chemtrails and geoengineering to what you were discussing about the spraying of gold particles? And while you're discussing that, could you possibly elaborate more on the spraying of gold and what could possibly be achieved by the spraying of these metallics into the atmosphere?
Sure. Bill Gates, gosh, I remember him back from my computer days. I actually know him and helped him with some of his projects.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Long-term career in spreading computer technology around the world. Now, the chemtrails, of course, it seems to be a part and parcel to the process we're speaking of affecting the atmosphere. And I think it's just an example of what we're going to do just to try and block things and prepare the Earth for things that are happening out in the cosmos, in the solar system. And I don't know that it speaks to exactly the one I was referring to, because I believe that the gold itself plays a particular part in warding off the gamma rays from the center of the universe. And there may be other processes that are occurring because of the magnetic waves from the sun and the influence of other planets. So I don't think they're directly connected. I just think they're all representative of things that we can do with our own atmosphere, or things that science and the governments are probably trying to do to protect us. And I mentioned we kept a lot of these things secret, and I think they're sort of coming to the forefront, probably through pressure from other countries. As I mentioned, some of the lesser technological countries want to be involved in spreading the word out, and they're sort of putting pressure on America. I actually think there's a connection there to crop circles. We talked about that briefly earlier also. And I think we're trying to bring out that information. Now, it's also possible that the government's sort of leaking this out through third parties, but it does indicate that the world is, or the governments in the world and cultures in the world are trying to do something to protect us. Now, gold, although that will block the gamma rays we mentioned, gold has historically been something that elevates the consciousness of man. It's considered a spiritual element that actually raises our consciousness. So that too could play a significance in the events that ensue after 2012, since the consciousness of man, Sanchez, has to be elevated. It could actually help us in that process. And part of the question is will that going to benefit just some people or all people?
And, you know, I think the Anunnaki, according to Zechariah Sitchin, wanted to sprinkle gold in their atmosphere to kind of protect it. And as you said, Christian, it's on a 3,600-year elliptical orbit. So there's got to be a reason. Maybe they want to keep heat in. Who knows, huh?
In on the planet because it's so far away, and also to bring in light. But, you know, they could have probably spread almost any metal to do that, because I think even silver might have been better. But gold has that spiritual property, but also it actually serves a purpose, better purpose here on Earth, since we know that we're going to be bombarded from rays from outer space.
Let's go to Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Julie, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Thanks for calling, Julie. Go ahead.
Good to talk to you, George. I've been listening for about 4 years now, and I'm really enjoying your program.
Super. Thank you, Julie.
The way that you talk about the Earth changes, and I do believe they will occur, I mean, connecting all the dots with research that so many people have done. But I guess because you've got the elite class, like the Illuminati and such, that want to control us, control everything, and with all these earth changes, and if we're going to have governments collapse, finance collapse, I mean, it kind of makes you wonder, is it even worth surviving past that because things are going to be so terrible?
I think it's worth living. It's worth fighting for. Christian, I'm sure you believe the same thing.
Yeah. For example, if these things collapse, perhaps we'll have a better system. For example, instead of having our economy based on things like gold and other monetary objects of value, perhaps everything we own will become the source of our value system, in which case everybody will own their own home and their own property. We'll have a totally different style of valuation. The governments probably need to change. Maybe they were only there temporarily, but are the governments truly representing us? Maybe we need a different kind of representation by the people. Now, when we speak of secret societies and Illuminati, we can't necessarily presume that they're nefarious. They could be serving some ancient purpose, which is where the Freemasons and Knights Templar and all these come in as an underlying source of these people, that they're actually protectors of a certain wisdom, and that they will be saving us and helping us. But, you know, historically, Julie, those people in the know have always thought the masses were ignorant. And in fact, we actually were at one time. We couldn't read or write. And so we couldn't share all that wisdom. That's why there's so many secrets, so many metaphors, even the Bible's triple metaphor, basically. All these secrets had to be preserved and protected, so they had to be in the hands of a select few, and perhaps they will be taking care of us. But just because there are changes, change itself shouldn't induce fear. I know it's our nature to be afraid of change, and that's why we spoke of it earlier in the show, why we want to get so much information out. So we have the experience of knowing the kinds of things we will go through. Chances are it'll be some of those things and less than all of them, but at least we have some preparation. Now, the things you mentioned about the government and economy and things like that, in the grand scheme of things, Julie, maybe they're not the most important things if we have the benefit of a government and the benefit of a value or an economy, and have food and health and things of that nature. So we don't know the underlying things that everybody is up to when we speak of these societies and government. And that's why I say the second most important thing people can do is find out. Approach our governments. Approach everyone that's up to something. Look like what we did with the H1N1 when all of us in the New Age movement, so to speak, in metaphysics and spirituality started speaking up. And the German soldiers, the whole army, decided not to take it. The nurses in New York decided not to take it. So much information came out about the microtechnology and the needle itself, and that it was a way of controlling everybody. And there were microchips tying everything together, some way of controlling us. Perhaps if there was a major plague on the earth, it would be a way of eliminating people. I mean, there's so many mysteries out there that are at least starting to come to the surface, especially through shows like Coast to Coast and George Norrie's program and many other lectures going on around the country and programs. It's coming out, Julie, and that's the idea. We all have to pursue whatever your interest is, even if it's one, two, or three, or just the things you mentioned, and start getting answers from everybody you can, because collectively we'll start getting the ultimate collective answers that we need.
Have you done any work or any research into the Hopi prophecy?
I've certainly looked into it, and that's, you know, I one of the most intriguing things of the Hopis that I liked was they mentioned that blue star that they knew would occur around 2012, and that's why I mentioned now is coming out of – there was a constellation called supernova called Vela that created that plume serpent effect. Actually, it was two in a row, and it comes from that direction of the sky. And the Hopi, along with all the ancient cultures, George, mentioned that we would have this Metatron, this new prophet, so to speak, indicating the major change. And they even think this occurred at the birth of Jesus. But they actually called it a blue star. And it's sort of a runaway star called an O-class star that is extremely massive, extremely large, heading in this direction. And that star may start bringing in meteor showers, for example, from the Pleiades and other places, another concern that many people have. But it's interesting, most of the prophecies of the Hopi, they were talking about things like railroad tracks and covered wagons. But when they got to things like that, it was kind of amazing. And also, you know, their culture spoke of ant people, which to me are like the Greys. It, yeah. Almost they're exactly like those aliens that I see when I'm doing mediumship and reading people that we call star people, where we see alien guides behind them. And those Greys could also be the other Atlanteans that we spoke of. There were light Atlanteans and dark Atlanteans that are at war with each other. Or there could have been the Lemurian connection to Atlanteans, where the two races so coincided at a while for a while, and they went underground, and supposedly they saved the Hopi. So, yeah, I've touched on it a little bit, and I think it's intriguing how much, if not all, of their prophecies have come true, especially those ones that I just touched on.
Let's go now to Gina in Fremont, California. Go ahead, Gina.
Oh, hi, George. Hi, Christian.
Hi.
I have a question. I'm a fan of the late Betty Bethards, and she was a well-known mystical teacher here in Northern California. She wrote a small book on Atlantis, and in this book, she described a way to find out to see if you were from Atlantis, and that was if you had the letter M in your palm of your hand, if you looked in your hand. Have you heard about that? Just curious.
Gina, but I will say that these synchronistic things and number patterns like this are very meaningful in this whole story, because there are patterns. There's a genius to the design of the universe. And the M, by the way, from a spiritual point of view, usually refers to temples and mountains, as does the letter A and the V inverted. And she designates someone that's on a spiritual path. When we're doing mediumship or clairvoyant reading of someone, we're looking for symbols like that. I don't tend to look at it in the hands because I can see it around the person. But it does give an indication of the character of that person. Now, for me, I see an Atlantean connection a totally different way. On the left-hand side of persons, there's a sort of a wedge that goes up thickly from the bottom up to a point on their left-hand side that's sort of ice blue, like looking into a glacier. And I always know right then that there's an Atlantean connection going on with that person. But, you know, letters and symbols are always a way to demonstrate in the current race of man the ancient wisdom. And so behind the letters, there was numbers. Behind the numbers, there was wisdom. So that's an accurate way of predicting connections, as you indicated. But also, what about the patterns around us? Many people see patterns of ones, like four ones, indicating great change. Patterns of twos indicating changes in process. Series of fours indicating angels are around us. All of those things are part and parcel to the same kind of ancient wisdom. And these things, Gina, had to occur before science, because science is only basically a few hundred years old, but mankind is 7.5 million years old, at least in this physical existence. So there had to be all these other ways of recording information and letting us know our proclivities.
Okay, great. Thank you, Gina, for that. And Kristen, we're going to come back and take final phone calls in just a moment. Do go up to his website, which is linked up right now at coasttocoastam.com. You'll find some of the fascinating things he has done. What a remarkable guy he is. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with your final phone calls. On our next Coast to Coast program, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us with more stories of high strangeness. She's been running all over the country putting together this report. So stand by for that one on our next show. And when we come back, we'll take final phone calls with Christian Von Lehr right here on Coast to Coast AM. Christian, what past civilization would you say to date might have the most influence on our present-day society? Would it be the Mayans, the Atlanteans, the Egyptians? Who?
I would say the Egyptians, because, one, a lot of this started there, and it was sort of a center point where the Ethiopians landed first, which were, the Atlanteans and the prior ETs. And so they created these pyramids, which probably have some enormous purpose beyond just the alignment with the Cygnus or Orion, as some people think. And there they developed the zero in mathematics and the calendar, and they have two places where they may have special records, where the others' locations may be ambiguous. But I do think because the world changed and the earth changes, they had to sort of spread that knowledge around. So secondly, I would think Mesoamerica, because at this particular point in time, we have such a clear distinction that date 2012 means something and sort of ties together all this metaphysical, spiritual stuff that we've been talking about. All of it, absolutely everything, has some important part to play after the 2012 event. It all means something. Whether you're drawn to crystal skulls or anything, meridians, all those things will play some part. And I think those two cultures have done the best to bring those to the forefront.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. We'll go to Orlando, Florida. It's Bob's turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Bob, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And hello to you, Christian, as well. And I'd actually like to make one quick comment. I work for Pepsi, where Indra Nooyi attends the Bilderberg Group meetings. And shortly thereafter, we merged and became one big conglomerate group. PepsiCo, basically, where we're joining the Tropicana, Frito-Lay, the whole nine yards. So that should give you an idea of how keen I am on globalization, especially when we have signs in our sales office saying one world, one order. And that kind of cracks me up every time I see it. And I wanted to get back to the subject that we were on, 2012. Basically, I do strongly believe that a shift of consciousness is necessary for humanity. Even if 2012, you know, even if nothing happened, a shift of consciousness is necessary, basically, to where we accept one another, to where we understand that we have a duty to help one another, to look at each person, to look at each human like we were family, saying, what can I do to help this person? Are you taken care of? And I would just like to say, or actually ask, Mr. Christian, do you think the recent height of UFO activity, especially with, you know, the UFO over China and the Chinese airport and everything, with the recent, I'd say in the past decade, it's just, you know, the numbers have tripled, quadrupled. Do you think extraterrestrial entities are well aware of what's going on with the Earth?
Aware of what's going on, I think they're a part of what the 2012 controversy is all about, that whole phenomenon. I think we can expect visitations of extraterrestrials in one form or another. I also think we'll have proof of them already existing. We probably have that. But this could be opening the door, so to speak, for actual visitations. And I don't necessarily think that we're discovering these things accidentally. I think a lot of them are staged. I think we're being tested. You know, remember the old War of the Worlds epic. We wanted to see how the world reacted, and it was panic. So we've learned to start releasing these things in slower doses to see how people react to them, but also to make them more and more aware and to create the controversy. So I think they are going to be related to what the prophecies say will be the coming of a messenger, and what a lot of these planetary, like the now, as I mentioned, that rogue sun coming towards us. I think all of these mean something connected to extraterrestrials, and also that connection to the center of the galaxy where we probably came from at one point in time would have another extraterrestrial connection. So it's probably all of this Atlantean, all this 2012 controversy is probably leading to our eventual introduction to true real life standing in front of us extraterrestrials.
Okay, let's go to Amanda in Michigan, first time caller. Go ahead, Amanda. Thanks for calling.
Hi, I just wanted to ask Christian if he had heard of a book called A Dweller on Two Planets.
The title again, please?
A Dweller on Two Planets.
A Dweller on Two Planets.
No, I have not. Sorry, Amanda.
Well, it's a book by a young boy, but it was supposed to have been channeled by him, by a man called Philos the Theban. And the whole book pretty much is just referencing the Atlanteans, and it just explains through the eyes of the Theban Philos, their way of life and how their spirituality worked and how they progressed through to their destruction. And it follows the young boy, the writer of the book, through his reincarnations and how this man is influencing him and teaching him. But the majority of the book focuses on the Atlanteans and how their thinking and how their spirituality resonates even to today and to all mankind. So I would really recommend you and anybody who's interested, not just in Atlanteans, just in being more spiritual and that path, to look up that book.
Thank you for the recommendation, but I want to say two or three things there. That's another example of how we're getting information and influences from the other side, other places, about what's about to incur and about consciousness and the development of it. But it's interesting that you mentioned the young boy, because the young children of today in the last 10 or 20 years actually have become more enlightened and are more willing to be psychic. They demonstrate their abilities. They see nature spirits, which should be the easiest thing in the world to see, by the way, and will probably be the first kind of light that we see, even before life on the other side, like those that have passed over. But they're more aware, they're more open to those things, and they're more willing to express them. This is where we get the concept of indigo children, rainbow children, crystal children. And I think through the children, they're opening their eyes because, you know, their lives being young hasn't been so tainted controlled by the mores and views of people, haven't been so programmed in this day and age when we're willing to let the children speak out. And I think a lot of wisdom will come directly through them. So I think you're correct in making that recommendation. We all need to learn these things. But also you mentioned something about guides and the particular kinds. We also see a pattern of that. Isn't it interesting that we've always got guided information, channeled information from these higher intellects? And I like that you mentioned that they're speaking of Atlantis and other guides are speaking of other things related to the subject too. It seems like no matter where we turn, we're getting advice and help from every imaginable source, whether it's extraterrestrials, whether it's through mediumship, whether it's through our own senses. We're all learning that something's happening around 2012.
Absolutely. James in Columbia, Missouri. Hey, James, go ahead.
Hi, Chris Neal. That's a wonderful, interesting subject tonight. I just was kind of curious about where the Germanic peoples, like the pre-Christian Germanics with the Austro-Hungarians and all that stuff, I wonder where they play within all the Atlantean kind of connection.
To the Celts, we know that's one of the waves that went after Ethiopians went to Egypt. Around the same time, they went all over the world to build their temples and spread the wisdom and probably hid information relics, by the way. And those relics could be empowered, by the way. They could be controlling meridians and other guidelines. But they were one of the locations that the Atlanteans went to, again, via the Ethiopians. So they are a wave of life. And this is where we start defining races that we currently understand when we think of the Germanic race or the Chinese or the Mexicans or the Indians. Those are the kind of races that the everyday world speaks of, but those had to come out of this one race we now call Indo-class race and the prior one that was Atlanteans. So they're all playing a part, and the messages in pieces are spread all over the world. Even in our books, I read a lot of books on nature spirits because it's a great way to introduce you to the first kind of life we're going to experience. Like in my book, Seeing and Sensing Gnomes, we speak of just this particular movement into that region of the world. We also speak in magical powers and mystical beings of sirens and mermaids and many of the beings and peoples and some of the mystical in the Germanic world. But it's interesting that no matter where we go in the world, we're speaking of angels, we're speaking of different kinds of nature spirits. We're speaking the same story everywhere, and that story is that there's all kinds of life, not just our kinds. And so the Germanic people have a story to tell. There was something about their part of the world that made that location ideal for their particular message.
Okay, great. Next up we go to Kathy. She's in Dayton, Ohio. Hi, Kathy, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering, when I was young, I was able to, I can remember we'd be driving in the car, and I would say, the next car that's coming around that corner is going to be blue, and I would be right. And my mom just said, you're really lucky at guessing these things. But I think kids have the psychic abilities, and then we lose them. And I'm wondering how I can get back to that. How can I start developing that?
Kathy, basically you're speaking of presentience. Presentience is a form of clairvoyance. If you have any form of clairvoyance, then it means you can also hear, you can also feel, which are psychic senses. Now, when we're younger, it's easier for us to exhibit those characteristics because our subconscious mind hasn't been programmed by those around us. And the subconscious mind tends to normalize, which means everyone becomes like everyone else. So those of us that are psychic are more willing to let these latent abilities come out. Now, as you grow up, the influences of the world around you start creating these blocks. And so basically the problem is to start removing the blocks. The best way I find and what I do when I work with people and I do readings and teach people is I start teaching people how to see energy. Because when you teach people how to see the energy, like around our body, this etheric energy, which is exactly what nature spirits are made of. You should check out the book Seeing and Sensing Gnomes. All of these are available on the website because we teach you these techniques. When you see this energy, your subconscious mind says, okay, I can see that kind of energy. Guess what? You can see any life associated with that energy, for example, nature spirits. So then in the other book, like Magical Powers, Mystical Beings, we speak of an astral energy. When we show people how to literally see astral energy without showing them astral people, just the energy itself, you're more willing to see life that exists in that particular energy. So learning to see astral energy is the way you'll start being more clairvoyant and seeing life on the other side. So we have to have some experience. We have to trick ourselves to get beyond these blocks by actually seeing energy.
When we once talked about these mystical beings, were they any part of the Mayan culture as well? Were the Mayans aware of these strange creatures?
Let me do it this way. In the etheric realm, which is just between us and the Atlanteans, okay, it's sort of a go-between, whenever we go to lighter consciousness, there's more variation of life. This is why we're stuck with one life human, one human kind of life. But in the nature spirits, there are 6,000 kinds of nature spirits. In Atlantean times, they were etheric also, so there are many variations. And we speak in Lemurian times of being monsters and all sorts of creatures, even vampires and things of that nature. But some of these beings and animals and creatures, however, whatever term you use, they cross boundaries, so to speak. And so in Atlantean times, of course, we would be seeing some of those, if not most of them, because that was an etheric race. Now, in Atlantean times, of course, you're going to see mermaids and you're going to see sirens. Mer people, being of the water, of course, were very real. Again, magical powers, mystical beings speak just to them. Sirens, which was trying to lure those people getting lost in sea away from those shallow areas where the continent's so submerged, and actually to safe ground. They weren't trying to trap them and hurt them or take advantage, like a lot of the books say. They were trying to help them find safe passage. But that's an example of mystical being, mirror people, sirens. Things like unicorns we can see because, again, we'll start seeing the etheric realms first because it's so close to us. Now, unicorns, for example, are the healing modality in the nature kingdom. They have to have some way of having improvements to health, and improving themselves. And the unicorn, the purpose of that horn was to harmonize energy and actually create a healing effect on the kingdoms of nature. Flying horses are certainly possible, although when I don't see flying horses when I see the nature kingdom, but I do see, believe it or not, small cats and dogs and horses like we have now. But a lot of the mystical beings or the beings in that we see in mythology, hear about in mythology, actually exist. Another one, in particular, would be dragons. Dragons are real, but remember, dragons, and part of that Ouroboros that we speak of when we talk about 2012 and Quetzalcoatl, that plumed serpent, are of the salamander class of nature spirit, which means the fire element, which is how the earth had to start, in which case it's the source of magic. It brings about change. It's literally latent magic when we speak to salamanders and those beings, but something needs to be applied to them, some sort of will, some direction. What do we want the magic? What magic do we want to occur? But all of these beings are going to start being visible. This is why I wrote all these books on nature spirits first, because we're going to have that experience first. Then we'll see angels. Then we'll see life on the other side, those that have passed over. It's also a place we go and we dream. Then some of us, those more enlightened, will start seeing life in the heavenly realms, which actually looks like blowing soap bubbles into the air, like kids blow soap bubbles. It looks very opalescent. That's what life looks like in heaven. And so the higher up we go, the harder it will be to see. But as Amanda, I forget which one that we're talking to.
Connie.
She was indicating she started having experiences when she was younger. Even now, everybody's starting to have those abilities, but we tend to block them. And that's where the parents and the families and peer groups come in. They're making us block our natural senses, and we want to encourage it instead, which is why I said we have to encourage the children to go ahead and explain their experiences, because it's interesting, no matter what child you speak to it with this gift, they all say the same thing. They all see the same thing. They see the angels, the nature spirits, the kind of beings that you're talking about, George, and it's interesting that so many of them anywhere in the world have the same experiences. That's sort of scientific proof right there. It's repeatable. It's demonstrable, and it makes sense.
All right, let's take a final call or two. Let's go to Mick in the state of Washington. Mick, let's squeeze you in.
Hi, George. Hi, Christian. Hi. Very, very synchronistic show for me. I was in the middle of reading Edgar Casey's readings on the Egyptian heritage, and perfect. Your show came on. And I was like, great. My question is about a book I read called Voyagers by Ashiana Diane, the Emerald Plate translations, where she goes back as far as 500 million years and talks about like the stories of the Bible being a very watered down version, distorted version of the real story, and that we came from a higher harmonic universe, and when we got into trouble there, blew ourselves up, came through this wormhole into a denser reality, the one we're in now, and that we're trying to get back.
What do you think of that?
On that, and also the lost souls. Could those just be fragments of?
All right, let's get it in. We got a minute to go. Go ahead, Christian.
Yeah, the biblical texts are telling a story in metaphors because the wisdom had to be protected. We've always done that in the past, Vic. And the Bible is a hard one to decipher because we don't usually have the keys. For example, when we speak of Adam and Eve, we're not really speaking of individuals. We're speaking of the consciousness of man. In Atlantean times, we split. This is where we get the concept of creating Eve from the rib of Adam. We were androgynous. We were basically Adam. And when we reached that midpoint in Atlantean times, we had to differentiate, and that's where we had man and woman. And so the stories of Noah and the floods and Genesis are all like very, very deep metaphors. But it is trying to tell a story that is to be protected from the masses. If we didn't hide it in this metaphoric way, we might lose it. And we also need the story form in order to carry it forward, Vic, because people couldn't read and write in the past.
Very good. Christian, thank you so much for being on the program. You brought us some great information. For Dan Galante, who just did a superb job tonight, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesure, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.